This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you along today as we talk to Dr. Stanley Martin. Dr. Martin is a board-certified and fellowship-trained specialist at Geisinger in infectious diseases. And that, of course, includes COVID-19. It's been in the news for 3 years. There have been many changes in both the virus and the information and advice surrounding it. As we begin 2023, we're getting some advice today from Dr. Martin on where we stand, how to handle it, and what the near future holds. Dr. Martin, thanks for joining us on the program. We've heard it said the pandemic is over. How do you respond to that statement? Is anything over, or are we just in a new phase?
It's not accurate to say that the pandemic is over, right? Because COVID has not gone away. We still have it. And we still have a moderately high amount of infection that's persistent in our community. Now, it's not the same virus as it was when it first hit. It has changed in such a way, and of course, our response to it has changed in such a way that it's certainly not the same pandemic, right, that it was when we first got hit.
I think so many times I see people that it feels like they're not taking it seriously enough, but yet we hear so-and-so got COVID and you say, oh no, well, I hope they're feeling better. Whereas 3 years ago, if we heard that, it would have been terrifying. So like you
right.
said, it's changed
right.
dramatically.
I think that's true. And I think a lot of that probably is for a couple of reasons, right? I think the reason that we don't see as severe COVID in the same way are a couple of reasons. I mean, first, obviously, widespread use of the vaccine has helped establish some immunity to the virus. Even if it doesn't always prevent people from getting the infection, it does still play a huge role in preventing them from getting sick from the virus, right? Or winding up in the hospital or dying from it. And the same with prior infection. So a lot of people have been exposed to the virus. They've had the infection. They've recovered, and as such, they've established some degree of immunity as a result of that as well. So those things are definitely big factors. I think the third factor is that we've seen this virus continue to mutate. The capacity for this virus to mutate is amazing. As it has mutated and changed and become more contagious over time, it's also become seemingly less virulent, right? And so we have not seen it cause some of the severe disease that it has when it first came around. And we had no, you know, we were naive, as we would say, from an immune perspective.
Now, we heard for a long time, get your shot, but I haven't heard that as much lately. Is that just a matter of the shots are not matching the variants now, or has pretty much everyone that will get immunized already been there?
Well, if you come to my clinic, you'll hear me tell you to get your shot.
okay.
You know, if we look at our patients who are in the hospital right now with COVID, if we want to see how many of them have actually been vaccinated in the last 6 months, it's like maybe 1%. Right. So in other words, the people who are in the hospital with COVID are people who are not up to date on their vaccines. Right. And so it is clear that the vaccine still has protection for those who are at highest risk. And the people in that category are the same as it's always been, the elderly. And by that, I'm defining that as age 65 or higher. Not that I'm trying to tell anybody they're old, but that's how we define it just in terms of the epidemiology. You know, people who have significant medical problems to begin with also are in that category, right? People with underlying lung disease, emphysema, heart disease, et cetera. Those are the people that truly can still benefit the most from getting up to date on their vaccine.
And as far as the vaccines and the boosters, is that something we can expect to just continue, or eventually is the goal that this will not be an issue? I mean, I feel like right now
as often as I hear about new variants, I feel like I'll be pretty much getting boosters till I die.
Yeah, I think that is really the big question as to what we can expect. It's hard to predict right now. I think the expectation is that this virus is not going to be going away, right? That it's going to continue to persist in our communities. And if you think about it, something like influenza, right? So influenza, although it doesn't necessarily persist in the community in the same way, it does come around every year in a very predictable way. And unfortunately, we've not been able to create a universal influenza vaccine. And so we still do essentially get a booster influenza shot recommendation to everybody every year as a result of that, right? Will it come to the same with COVID? Would we get to a point where we would be doing a regular fixed schedule with COVID vaccine as a recommendation? Possibly. It would be great if you could tie it in with a flu shot and just have one shot for both viruses, right? That would be ideal if we had to do something like that. But it's difficult because of all these variants which keep rising up and some of the unpredictable nature. As I said earlier, a lot of these variants have been much less virulent than what we've seen historically, but that doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. It's possible we could see a variant come down the pike, which actually is much more virulent. We haven't, thankfully, and so I think a lot of us are feeling a lot better about the odds of that at this point, but we still don't know for sure. And if something like that were to happen, it would have to change our whole approach to dealing with it once again, unfortunately.
Okay. What do you recommend now? How do you recommend people act in public? I mean, is masking still important? Is it something we should do as part of a combined program of protecting ourselves in addition to getting the booster shots? Or just give me some direction here.
Yeah, no, I think these are fair questions. And I think the one thing that I would emphasize is that there's no reason we can't have normalcy as long as we think a little bit intelligently about what's happening in the communities, right? So there's always going to be individuals who are at a very high risk. And for those individuals, masking in public, certainly inside, is always going to make sense. When they're particularly around larger crowds of people, right? People who might be in very close contact with those people might also think about their own health. Even if they're not worried about their own health, they should be worried about spreading the virus to somebody else who may be at very high risk, right? So, you know, do you need to wear a mask when you just go to the grocery store or the hardware store? You know, no, you probably don't, at least for most of us. Some may, and that's okay, and that can be good. I mean, if I'm going to the grocery store, I probably don't wear a mask, but if I'm going to go to the airport and get on an airplane, I can guarantee you I'm going to wear a mask, because in that setting, the risk is so much higher, right? And so the risk varies depending on the activity that you're doing. And obviously in the healthcare setting, whether it's a hospital or a clinic, we're still wearing masks. Be up to date with your booster. Because that will protect you more than anything.
Unfortunately, your advice requires common sense, and there seems to be a dearth of that sometimes lately. So, but now,
well, I have two teenagers at home, so I'm used to making statements that should be common sense that everybody just ignores. So,
all right. Now, speaking of teenagers, my own deals with autoimmune disorders. Is that something that people in a home with that should be looking at this differently, because you are trying to protect that person?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Things like autoimmune diseases are quite variable, and some of them are mild, and some of them are quite severe, right? And so, somebody who is very, very immunosuppressed is the kind of person that you really do need to be worried about, right? I like to give the example of a couple of years ago. You may remember Colin Powell. He unfortunately passed away from COVID. He had multiple myeloma, right? So he had a cancer of the bone marrow, essentially. He could not respond. His body just could not respond to the vaccine, right? Because of the nature of his disease, you know, you could vaccinate him all day long, and there was nothing that you could do to get him to respond. And unfortunately, you know, when people around him did get the virus, they transmitted it to him unwittingly, and he passed away as a result of that, right? And so that kind of phenomena can and still does happen, right? So, you know, even though the risk of death is still much lower than it used to be, it's definitely not zero. I mean, we still have patients who pass away, unfortunately, in our hospitals as a result of COVID.
And we've heard lately about China and a surge there. Is this something that's going to continue here, or is that something we should look at as a totally kind of a different situation, different universe to the patterns here?
I mean, that's a good question. China's management of COVID has been very different than ours, and in one of their biggest limitations, quite frankly, has been their vaccination, right? So they have not engaged with the mRNA vaccines that we've used here in the United States and a lot of other countries that have been extremely effective and helpful. They've, you know, relied on other vaccine strategies, which, quite frankly, at the end of the day, have been very ineffective. And their ability to administer vaccines has also been very limited. Because of the distribution and the size of their population, controlling things has obviously been very difficult. So I don't think we can compare ourselves to what China's experienced and think that we're going to be in the same boat, per se.
Now, we're dealing this winter with a lot of RSV and flu at the same time. Is that connected to the fact that people have been damaged by COVID?
Part of it is the fact that because of COVID, in the last couple of years, we have not seen these other viruses to the same degree that we have historically, right? So if you go back over the last 2 years, prior to this year, I should say, you see a very low rate of flu and RSV infections in our communities. And that was because of everything we were doing to try to prevent COVID, right? The masking, the social distancing, et cetera. All those things also really helped stymie the spread of those other viruses, which you can say, okay, well, that was maybe a good thing, right? And it's true, it was a good thing. The effect of that, though, was that we went a couple years where people weren't being exposed to these viruses, they weren't getting vaccinated, per se, and their immunity to these viruses from past exposures had waned. And you particularly see small children who were born during this time who never were exposed to these viruses and never got vaccinated, right? And so all of a sudden, now we stop, you know, all the normal measures that we were using to prevent COVID, and it allows flu and RSV to kind of come roaring back. And you have a population now who's much more prone to the infection in the first place as a result of what's been going on the last couple of years.
Is Geisinger still dealing with that surge, or has that waned a bit? I know several weeks ago there was a talk of, you know, being out of beds kind of situation.
Yeah, it was very challenging for our pediatric colleagues here at Geisinger and throughout the country when it comes to trying to manage RSV in the children. They were functioning at over 100% capacity. It has gotten better. The RSV numbers have come down. The flu numbers, of course, have started to go back up, though. And so we have much higher flu numbers than we've had in the last couple months in our hospitals. But the number of new RSV infections has come down considerably, thankfully.
Now, long-term COVID, also a topic. I mean, this is something that a lot of people I know have talked about issues they've had.
Yeah, long COVID or long hauler syndromes associated with the COVID infection is a very frustrating and curious phenomena that happens in some people. And this is essentially where people who've had COVID, they've recovered from the COVID, right? So in other words, the virus has gone away. They don't have the infection anymore, but yet they don't feel back to normal yet. And this can persist for months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, even 12 months. And it can be all sorts of various non-specific kind of problems. So fatigue, headaches, joint pains, sometimes feeling a little short of breath with exertion, even things like depression, anxiety, have been associated with this kind of long haul COVID phenomena. Why it happens is still not entirely clear. There is a lot of research that's being done to look into this, try to better understand it. Therapy for it can be challenging. A lot of it has to do with physical therapy, but sometimes there are other phenomena that are happening as a result of COVID infection. As you pointed out, maybe there's can be lung damage or heart damage as a result of the infection, and so that may need to be treated differently. And so for people who are worried about long COVID, I would suggest that they be seen by their physician and get evaluated.
We've been talking with Dr. Stanley Martin of Geisinger about the COVID pandemic and where we currently stand. We thank you for joining us on the program, Doctor, and we thank you, the listener, for tuning in. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.